This is The Week in Review, where we will discuss the top political stories in the news, from President Trump calling for a government shutdown to fund the wall, to his souring relationship with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, to state stories like State Superintendent Tony Evers running for governor, and another public hearing on the Foxconn bill. And we will welcome the stories you want to talk about as well. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. If you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's welcome our Week in Review guests. Kevin Benversi is with us, Research Director with Media Trackers. Good morning.
Morning.
Good to have you with us. Ed Filone is also with us, an Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Good morning to you.
Joy, I wish you both a good morning and the best of luck in your future endeavors after you leave your show.
Thank you very much. Yes, I announced last week that I was going to retire at the end of September. So thank you very much for your kind words. I'm still looking forward to the next 5 weeks or so doing the Week in Review and other shows. Let's start with the rift between President Trump and Mitch McConnell. The New York Times reported that the two have not spoken to each other since a profanity-laced telephone conversation on August 9th. Trump didn't like McConnell's comment about the president having excessive expectations about the speed at which Congress could push through the Republican agenda. McConnell reportedly was even doubting privately that Trump could save his presidency. And Trump has, of course, been critical of Mitch McConnell for not getting the health care bill through. So how big a deal is this, Kevin Benversi, that the president and the majority leader in the Senate from his own party are not getting along all that well?
It's a medium to big deal, especially if you want to see the Trump legislative agenda move forward. Trump needs Mitch McConnell much more than Mitch McConnell needs Trump. The reality of everything in terms of just the politics of it all is Mitch McConnell's probably going to be there well past Donald Trump. He's already indicated he wants to run for re-election next time he's up for the Senate in Kentucky. And he's been there for, I want to say, 30 years. So the thing is with Trump is that he seems to have no knowledge whatsoever of the legislative process, no knowledge of policy in general. And this, as a conservative Republican who was never Trump, is one of those things that always kind of worried you, because you have a president who essentially sees himself as Caesar, for lack of a better analogy, and wants basically everything he wants enacted into law now. And he doesn't realize that, you know, You got a gland hand. You got to grease the wheels of legislation. That there is a committee process. That there is these things that you need to have hearings on, especially up in the Capitol Hill. So, but the problem of the politics of this for McConnell is McConnell has been used by what for another lack of a better term, these purity for profit groups, a lot of what I call scam packs, as like the example of what's wrong with Washington, D.C. He's been attacked by guys like former Senator Jim DeMint, former head of the Heritage Foundation, as, you know, this giant rhino squish, when in actuality he's fairly conservative. I remember the days when Mitch McConnell was the lone wall fighting against McCain-Feingold and seen as one of the most conservative members of the Senate. Now he's this rhino squish, which is amazing to me. But to go back to my point, you know, beating up on Mitch McConnell is something the conservative base loves. So that will help Trump, at least in the short term politically. But long term, he needs McConnell much more than McConnell needs him.
Yeah. So what do you think, Ed?
Well, I think I'm not going to disagree with much of what Kevin said, but I think the two key factors to keep in mind here is, first of all, that this is a feud of Trump's own making. Trump is raising issues like ending the filibuster. No one in America cares about ending the filibuster. This is not an issue on the political consciousness sitting in coffee shops in Baraboo or wherever. He's Trump is imposing these artificial time deadlines on the Senate. You know, we must have a bill by X date. We must do this by a certain date, which is no need. No need. It's completely a feud of stone making that he's creating this disruption. And I think it's because he does not understand that being president is not acting in a certain way. It's not this sort of juvenile conception that presidents are people who walk around with generals and issue orders to other people, but rather being president means having certain policy goals for the nation and trying to implement those goals through our legislative process under the Constitution. So he has no concept of what a president is or what a president should do. He's creating this feud on his own. The second thing I think we need to keep our eye on is that Mitch McConnell is behaving in the interests of the institution. Mitch McConnell is not answering Trump's fire. He's not looking for this feud. He's trying to downplay it, work behind the scenes, because even though he personally may not appreciate Trump, he knows that he's got a bigger obligation to the institution of the Senate. Whereas Trump has not one day thought about the institution of the presidency. He does not differentiate between his own whims, his own desires, his personal feuds, and what's good for the institution of the presidency. So I think that this is a further example of that disconnect.
Yeah, Trump went after McConnell and House Speaker Paul Ryan yesterday on Twitter over the debt ceiling. Trump wanted to attach this plan to increase the debt ceiling or the country's borrowing limit to a bill that was going to help veterans. But he said McConnell and Ryan didn't do it. Now Trump tweeted, "We have a big deal with Dems holding them up." What do you think, Kevin, about this, I guess, the Twitter insult, but also the whole idea of the debt ceiling fight?
Well, everyone knew the debt ceiling fight was coming. The Twitter fights are, again, this is one of these things where if this is how he makes friends and influences people, well, he's not doing a great job of it. I mean, you could probably say his insults against both Senators McCain, Collins, and Murkowski probably helped torpedo the health care reform bill because, you know, I don't know about you, but if you're a senator and you have a president who's attacking you, why would you vote with the president who's attacking you? So, I mean, again, I thought Ed had a great point, where these are all crises, legislative crises of Trump's own making, of his own ego, literally writing checks that legislatively cannot pass. Mm-hmm. And that's like 90% of the problem legislatively with everything with Trump is that his mouth and his ego get so far ahead of him that he hasn't realized, oh crap, you know, and there's no one inside that White House in that inner circle. Maybe it is Mike Pence, because he's the only one with Capitol Hill experience inside the inner circle, and that's because of his vice president and former congressman from Indiana. But as for the debt ceiling, I mean, everyone knew this was coming. I mean, the truth of the matter is, I mean, I think what you're probably eventually going to see is maybe some sort of immigration reform. I don't think the wall will come. I think the wall is probably his far negotiating tactic. If you go all the way back to the his art of the deal style, which if you ever read the book, it's always a fascinating thing to get inside the mind of people by reading their books. And he's always one of these guys who you throw out option E when you really want option A. And if you get anywhere between D through B, you call that a win. And that's essentially what he's probably thinking in his head. The wall, theoretically, could work in some places. Theoretically, it couldn't work in some places. But as far as the debt ceiling goes, it's going to have to happen. It's going to be a bipartisan thing because you have the Freedom Caucus, which is going to, you know, fight some things tooth and nail. And, you know, like past debt ceilings, you know, there's going to be, you know, Democratic votes needed, and going hardline is not going to help anything.
Yeah. Any comments on the debt ceiling, Ed?
Well, let's pause for a moment and remember that candidate Trump was very critical of legislation raising the debt ceiling and members of Congress who voted continually to raise the debt ceiling. And so let's just pause and appreciate the irony here that he is not only reversing his prior condemnation of this kind of legislation, but he's criticizing Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell for not actually accomplishing the opposite of what he ran on. And this is the destabilizing force of Donald Trump. And, you know, it's easy to sort of view him as a ridiculous figure, but he's actually a dangerous figure because by whipsawing back and forth without regard to consistency, he's a constant disruptor in public opinion, and it makes it very difficult for the general public to develop positions on policy and to follow the political debate when Trump feels free to just lob these random hand grenades into the political consciousness via Twitter.
Yeah. Speaking of the debt ceiling and the wall, as Kevin mentioned a little bit ago, Trump at a campaign-style rally in Arizona made a bold threat to deliver on one of his most popular campaign promises. Let's listen.
Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall. Let me be very clear to Democrats in Congress who oppose a border wall and stand in the way of border security. You are putting all of America's safety at risk.
The House already passed a spending bill with funding for the wall, but the future of that in the Senate isn't looking good. House Speaker Paul Ryan said a government shutdown is unnecessary and asked Trump to give Congress more time to fund the wall through regular order. So, Kevin, build that wall and shut down the government to do it if you have to?
I think it's possibly one of the most idiotic moves politically you could do. If he wants to ensure his potential impeachment in 2019 by a Democratic House, yeah, he should push for shutting down the government, because that alone will give Democrats running the DCCC and anyone else running for a House seat basically the ammo they need to say, see, Republicans, even when they control everything, can't, you know, do simple governing. So that essentially is going to be the free license to impeach if he really wants to shut down the government. I know there are people out there saying, oh, but the government shutdown in 2012 didn't hurt Republicans in 2013, 2014. You had Obama's president. You had Obama, you know, either vetoing or whatever. If you pass a bill that funds the government by both the House and Senate, and then he vetoes it because there's no funding for the wall, then this is all on him. And again, it's all about his ego and what's feeding it. And you just keep your. I understand the promise and, you know, people wanting the wall, at least Trump supporters. But there is just the reality of it is that, you know, there are some areas, you know, where, you know, if they did smarter border security, they could, you know, bypass a wall straight along the entire California, Arizona, New Mexico border, which, you know, apparently is what he wants. So, but. I think it's ludicrous.
Yeah, and yesterday at the White House press briefing, the White House press secretary was asked about whether Trump was serious about really wanting to shut down government to build the wall, and the answer was he's committed to that wall. It was Ed.
Well, this is again interesting to watch the progression of Donald Trump's positions. We start with I'm going to build a wall. But Mexico's going to pay for it, and it's very easy for the Trump supporters to go for the red meat and cheer for a wall because they figure there's no harm to me. I'm not paying for it. My taxes won't go up. Mexico will pay for it, even though, of course, that was an utter – it's a good applause line at these rallies. And then it shifts to, well, we're going to build a wall even if the United States has to pay for it. And so now all of a sudden there's the prospect that you know Trump supporters might see their taxes go up, but people tend to discount – future events and think, well, maybe it'll happen, but maybe other people will feel more pain than me. And now it's progressed to, we're going to build the wall, or if not, I'm going to shut down the federal government. And so now you've got Trump supporters who would not have access to government services and potentially some benefit programs, checks may not get mailed out to them. And now all of a sudden you can have some real economic harm to his base. And Trump is just not even considering these factors. And so I think that this is another example of him running these sort of random ideas that he thinks in abstract or popular with his base, but not connected to the overall reality of governing our country. And, I agree with Kevin that if, in fact, there is a government shutdown of any significant length, that is directly tied to funding for the wall, I think it will be a disaster for Republicans in the midterms and in the next presidential race. This is not an issue that Republicans are going to rally around Trump. There are a lot of private property owners along the border who are going to see their property being seized, and they're going to become media darlings of the alt-right private property seized by big, bad federal government. And it's not going to solve the problem because almost 50% of undocumented people in this country come right through the border with a valid visa and then just stay. And no wall is going to prevent that.
Ned in Knowlton is. I'm sorry. Ned in Knowlton is with us. Hi, Ned.
Hi. First of all, the border wall is not needed because immigration from our south border currently is higher than immigration across the wall. It's a waste of money. And if you aren't outraged by Trump's threat, then you simply aren't paying attention. On the news this morning from NPR, they talked about South Texas, the first segment of the wall building. And the first segment will cost $1.6 billion. Right through the highest diversity of birds and butterflies, one of the highest in the United States. And an access road and building the wall on the levee, as they described on the news, will obviously disturb that habitat and make it very hard for people who are interested in those things to get where they want to go. So we as Wisconsinites need to contact our U.S. senators, Baldwin and Johnson, and ask them to vote no on that first segment of funding for $1.6 billion. It's an outrageous waste of money, and we should not be doing it.
All right. Thanks, Ned. Well, Ed, Ned's concerned about environmental damage that's going to occur, but he also said that more people are exiting than entering through the southern border. Is he right?
Well, we've seen a decrease in the number and the size of the undocumented population in the last few years. It's been generally going down. Of course, these are all soft numbers. We don't have exact figures. But apprehensions are down. Certainly at the border. But again, what I said right before the call, about 50%, maybe a little less, maybe a little bit more, of the undocumented population came right across every border checkpoint with a valid visa as a tourist, as a student, as a short-term worker, and nothing in this very expensive, environmentally destructive construction is going to prevent that from continuing.
Kevin?
Well, yeah, Ed's got a point about how most illegal immigration happens in this country. I mean, it's people overstaying their visas. It makes for a great story and for great campaign fodder to say people are jumping over the border. I think the wall is just, I don't know if it's one of these do or die things with the president and his base, but it's, I mean, nobody seems, I'm one of these people who thinks they should just push for tougher border security. Instead of a wall, because that clearly seems to be working, as both the caller and Ed pointed out. The number of crossings over, at least in the last year and a half, have decreased, and a lot of that is because, ironically, Trump's rhetoric. That a lot of people from Mexico think they're unwanted here, so they're not even going to try, or you have, just all around, increases of patrols by CBP. The reality of it is, I mean, again, going back to the shutdown discussion earlier, if he wants to do this, he's only going to, cut off his nose to spite his face.
We are talking with Kevin Benversi and Ed Falone during this edition of The Week in Review. We welcome your input on the political news stories of the week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network. We are talking with two guests coming from different perspectives about the top political news stories of the week. Ed Filone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Kevin Benversi is the research director with Media Trackers. Our number, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We were just talking about President Trump's a fiery campaign-style speech in Phoenix, where, among other things, he said that we should shut down the government to build the wall. After Trump's speech, former National Intelligence Director James Clapper wondered on CNN if Trump is equipped to occupy the Oval Office.
I really question his ability to, his fitness to be in this office. And I also am beginning to wonder about his motivation for it. Maybe he is looking for a way out.
Do you think, Ed, first, that President Trump is looking for a way out?
Well, I was one of those people who believed during the campaign that Trump really didn't want to win the election, and was perhaps more surprised than anyone at the election returns back in November. But once he assumed the office, I think he's determined to fill out his term, but maybe subconsciously. He certainly does not enjoy the job. He certainly does not show any signs of enjoying and wanting to perform the sort of mundane task of governing. He'd much rather go out and hold campaign rallies or get into Twitter feuds. And so just look subconsciously at, how he behaves, how he spends his time, where he puts his efforts. This seems to be a person who is sending out signals that he is miserable in the job. And I think, as much as we do have the media elite and the sort of professional political class in this country, I think Trump does have a point when he talks about how the media is perhaps overly critical of him or some of the talking heads on TV, the special guests on whatever talk show are very critical. But the reality is that this professional class, they'll give politicians a lot of leeway. But when someone is so outside the norms, the way our political system is set up of checks and balances, different interest groups, when someone is so outside the norms of expected behavior, you can certainly expect talking heads like Jim Clapper and the media to try and eject this this foreign element from our midst.
Let me get a caller in before we get Kevin to respond. John in Janesville. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
They keep sending me things to impeach Trump, but when you look at it, then you have Pence and Paul Ryan coming up, which are equally as bad. So I can't see what we should do about it, because if you get rid of the one, you got the other two.
All right, thanks, John. You got a lot of background noise there. So John says if Trump is impeached or he steps down, it's Pence next, and isn't too impressed with that. Kevin, would you rather have Mike Pence as president?
Well, I think it would be a much more normal back and forth policy debate than it is kind of what we have this presidency by trolling, which appears to be the Trump governing style. Clearly, with the rally he had in Phoenix, and he likes the campaign trail much more than he likes governing. As Ed said, this is a guy who clearly probably doesn't like the ins and outs of his typical day. Part of that is, the separation that this is a man who never held a governing position, who never held a political job, who his whole lifestyle has been self promotion and PR. And there are people, and you can see this even in the professional political class, where there are guys who are really good at campaigning, and then there are guys who are really good at governing, but can also campaign. Trump is the guy who clearly prefers to campaign. And you can see it in his rhetoric, you can see it in his Twitter feed, you can see it in everything else like that. And, his interaction with Congress, going back to our original topic with McConnell, So therein lies the question: is can he actually find the means to, you know, as he said during the campaign, I can be presidential like that, and snap his fingers and all like other stuff like that. He does have those moments where he can actually, you know, become a president, you know, as his speech on Monday on Afghanistan showcased. But then he flips it around in the next 24 hours in this whole news big rally in Phoenix where he's attacking two sitting senators from the state, you know, whose votes he's going to need. So, I mean, he needs to realize if this was at late 2019, early 2020, I think it would be excusable because everyone knows a presidential campaign is coming. But the fact that this is, what, 7-8 months into his presidency is it's just not only beneath the office at this point, especially because he should be focusing on governing, he should be focusing on putting his agenda through, but because as Ed and I think other people have noticed, this is a guy who clearly doesn't like the job he's in and he'd rather be doing something else.
Yeah. So, and as you mentioned, Kevin, you know, in Phoenix, Arizona, on Tuesday night, President Trump insulted journalists. He complained about Arizona's Republican senators. He did many other divisive comments. And then he went to Reno and he spoke before the American Legion conference. And then he, during that speech, called for the nation to come together.
It is time to heal the wounds that divide us and to seek a new unity based on the common values that unite us. We are one people with one home and one great flag.
So, the New York Times said something about whiplash with following President Trump. Ed Falone, so now President Trump says we should unify.
Yeah, it is to laugh, isn't it? It's reached this level of absurdity, like a bank robber robbing a bank on Monday and then showing up on Tuesday to volunteer to help cover up the bullet holes in the walls that he created and saying, what, I'm a good guy now. You know, the public is not fooled by the occasional odd reading of a speech off of a teleprompter. There is a role for creating political enemies and trying to rally your base to your side. Typically, what we see in American history is that presidential administrations leave it to the vice president to take on the political attacks. Think of Spiro Agnew under Nixon. Think of Bob Dole, whose reputation took a bit of a hit because of his political attacks that he engaged in as a vice president and a vice presidential candidate. But the idea is, you know, when you launch these attacks, it's polarizing to the public. So you want that polarization to circle around the vice president, but not the president. The president should be a unifying figure for the country. Trump is instead embracing the polarizing role. And that is not a path to political success, period.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who, as he's saying, we need to unify. Well, Mr. President, please lead by example. And as you noted with the New York Times, there is a whiplash. There's a whiplash effect week to week with this. I mean, you had everything where, you know, he clearly doesn't like prepared statements, but then when he's off the cuff, it's Trumpzilla. And everything that, you know, never Trump Republicans like myself were worried about during the campaign, which is this guy, you know, has no filter and that there's nothing, you know, that comes out of his mouth that, you know, clearly was thought through. And he needs to, I mean, he needs to literally not just take a week off, but during that week off, assess what the problems are. And he clearly does not have, you know, I would say the lack of ego to do that, if you want to go psychological on this. But the reality of Trump, you know, when it comes to being a unifier, is, you know, he's never shown in the past, you know, if you ever watched The Apprentice, his whole thing was, I thrive on conflict, you know, that conflict leads to better result and all this other stuff, which is fine if you're managing a real estate business or a reality show. But in politics, it's about, it is the art of the possible. And you know, who can get the best compromise, you know, whatever. He says he's the ultimate deal maker. So far, he's not showing it.
Well, Kevin, is it time for Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, to call out Trump by name?
I'm sorry, what?
Is it time for Paul Ryan, a Speaker of the House, to call out Trump by name?
That's something for his office to determine. I mean, I think if tax reform blows up, then Paul Ryan's probably lost any and all faith of getting anything out of this president, because for Paul, he's suffered through a lot just to try to get potential tax reform. And I think what he needs to do, and you sadly lost that bridge when Reince Priebus left, was you had to have at least some connection between, you know, Capitol Hill and the White House. And, you know, the hope among you know, those of us who were concerned, Republicans who were concerned about Trump, was, you know, that he'd attack Hill Republicans when he has no other choice, because he doesn't want to take the blame for anything. That's clearly what's happening. It's going to make September insanely, you know, cringeworthy potentiality for politically. But, I mean, you know, Paul Ryan's essentially kind of, you know, I wouldn't say made his bed with Donald Trump, but I mean, he's clearly working the political calculus of, I want to get tax reform. I want that to be my legacy. This is a guy who did not want to be Speaker, who was happy as Ways and Means Chairman in the House, and was essentially conscripted into the job because nobody else wanted it. And you can tell that by his leadership style. But if he's thinking, if I can get tax reform, that will be my legacy, and he's betting it all on tax reform, which, you know, may or may not be a great bet at the end of the day.
So, Ed, should he risk tax reform and call out Trump?
Well, I think, you know, that's an interesting observation from Kevin. You know, myself personally, I don't expect to benefit from tax reform. I expect people at a higher income level than professors at Marquette University to benefit. And if that's the case, then I look at, you know, the Speaker of the House risking economic ruin for our country and all kinds of chaos for the benefit, potentially, not guaranteed, but the benefit of a very wealthy elite class. And I'm not sure on any sense that that's a good calculation.
Yeah, we shouldn't forget about this. Trump showed his top strategist, Steve Bannon, to the door last Friday after last week's Week in Review. Bannon is a favorite of the far right wing of the Republican Party. He pressed Trump to follow through on the travel ban, for example, and to withdraw from the Paris Climate Change Agreement. Bannon has since returned to his old job at Breitbart.com. So is this going to make a difference, Kevin?
I think the writing was on the wall that Bannon was on his way up by just those, I guess you would call them, media exit interviews he was doing all week. And, you know, so, I mean, it should have been no surprise probably by, like, Wednesday of last week that he was on his way out. I think the bigger concern here is, again, you know, congressional Republicans, which is now you have potentially two forces, one at the White House, one on the outside, because Bannon has said, you know, my goal is to try to preserve the Trump presidency that we campaigned on. And, you know, when you have Hill Republicans who are trying to get stuff done versus this national populist entity that has become Breitbart.com, which is not what Andrew Breitbart envisioned it to be, but has now become what Steve Bannon envisioned it to be. It's going to be interesting to see, because, you know, you clearly have, you know, a White House that does not want to take the blame for anything, even though they probably, you know, they probably deserve, you know, 60% of the blame for stuff blowing up right now in terms of just the legislative agenda. And just, you know, I worry again, you know, we're it's going to be, you know, where, you know, nothing, you know, antagonizes, you know, the conservative voter than these, you know, again, purity for profit groups. These guys send out emails and say, "This rhino squish, and this guy's not getting it done," when they're trying to get it done. And they just, you know, prefer to, you know, give money so that we can, you know, then pocket it ourselves as a scam pack. So, and then Breitbart, you know, is an expert of that. I mean, just look at what happened, you know, last cycle when they pushed, you know, Paul Nehlen against Paul Ryan. And he ends up getting 16% of the vote. And the only people who were shocked by that figure were Breitbart itself.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to move on because I'm running short on time here. And I did want to get both of you, before we move on to some state issues, to react to the Hillary Clinton comments in the news this week. Excerpts of Hillary Clinton's upcoming book, What Happened, released this week. She wrote about Trump's pacing, hovering demeanor during their second debate last October, and what was going through her mind at that moment. And here is Clinton reading from the book about that.
Do you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, back up, you creep, get away from me. I know you love to intimidate women, but you can't intimidate me, so back up. I chose option A. I kept my cool, aided by a lifetime of dealing with difficult men trying to throw me off. I did, however, grip the microphone extra hard.
Oh, that's it. So she thought he was a creep when he was kind of pacing around behind her there. Edda, any reaction?
Well, I was surprised when I heard that excerpt, because what that demonstrates to me is that candidate Trump got inside Hillary Clinton's head just the same way he got inside of the Republican field. And I would have expected Hillary Clinton, with her experience, to not fall for that. You know, as a candidate, it's too easy to get distracted by the latest tweet or latest news report and to sort of lose your ability to focus, your ability to concentrate, because you're constantly distracted. And Trump had that way of getting into the head of his opponents. The thing you should do in that situation is just ignore your opponent, focus on your theme, your message, making your case. And if you do a good job at that, everything your opponent says or does on the stage is irrelevant. But instead, if you're focused on where your opponent is standing, what color their tie, the expression on their face, they're not focusing on communicating your message, making your positive case.
Yeah, Senator Al Franken says that many Washington Democrats, though unwilling to criticize Hillary Clinton in public, wish that she would move on. They fear that her complaints help Trump make his case. Very briefly, Ed, do you think that Hillary and Democrats should move on from the loss?
That for me or Kevin?
Yeah, Ed, you first, Ed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the Republican Party is facing is really the same thing as the Democratic Party is facing, which is let's look ahead, let's look forward beyond Trump. You know, what are the needs of this country? What are the policies this country needs, economic, national security? And how do we make the case and convince the public in the face of all of these disruptors, Breitbart, interest groups who really want nothing more than to prevent democratic self-governance, keeping us from reaching a national consensus on any issue? What are the themes, the policies moving forward post-Trump that both political parties should be advancing to bring this country back together and to rescue us from this administration?
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
As clearly showing, I mean, Hillary Clinton has no desire to move on. I mean, that's half of the book. I mean, the real question is going to be for those in Wisconsin is there anything written about why she didn't come here for the last 3 months of the campaign? Not what the heck happened in that second debate, which in my opinion was probably the worst debate I've ever seen between two human beings running for the White House. It was a disgrace to the quorum on both sides. I don't care who is invading whose personal space. I mean, they both came off as children that debate, if I recall correctly. The other comment that I could really make a crack about, where she talks about, you know, having to was something about, you know, domineering men. Does that include her husband? So there's that final jock there that I had to get in. But, I mean, it shows essentially, you know, why, you know, Barack Obama said in 2008, Hillary, you're likable enough. I mean, because she's showing why, you know, again, to not just the Republican base, but Americans in general, why nobody liked this woman as a presidential candidate, or isn't as a candidate in general. She's just, you know, she may say that she makes, you know, that Trump makes her skin crawl, but she makes a lot of other people's skin crawl, and it's and it's not just her, and it's mostly her demeanor and the way she acts. And even in that little soliloquy of a thing, she's essentially trying to focus group. Do I, A, say nothing and just take it, or B, you know, call him a jerk straight to his face? And you're going, why are you asking the book reader? You know, you should have done doing this and making the decision right then and there in your head.
We have to, we're way past break time, and we have many more state issues to talk about. Still have some national issues that we are not going to have time for. But you know what? On Point, and it's a weekly news roundtable. We'll talk more about national issues, including more troops headed to Afghanistan. We'll let On Point handle that coming up. This is the Week in Review, talking with Ed Filone and Kevin Benversi, and with you, if you'd like to join in. We will talk about Foxconn and Tony Evers throwing his hat into the gubernatorial ring, and other state issues at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Kevin Benversi, the research director with Media Trackers, and Ed Filone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. If you'd like to join in as we turn our focus now on state of Wisconsin issues, Governor Scott Walker has a new Democratic challenger in State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Evers. Evers officially entered the race on Wednesday from a park in the Madison suburb of Fitchburg.
I always believe that what's best for our kids translates into what's best for our communities, best for our economy, and frankly, best for our democracy.
So what's best for our kids? Evers is the fifth Democrat to formally declare his candidacy. Walker says he plans to announce his reelection bid after the state budget is signed. Governor Walker also reacted, saying that he expected more Democrats to enter the race. Tony Evers was reelected as state superintendent of public instruction in the last election, and a lot of Democrats were looking at that as a bright spot, a beacon. Ed Filone, is Tony Evers a strong candidate against Governor Walker?
Tony Evers is a very strong candidate against Governor Walker. When I ran for state Supreme Court, Evers was on a statewide ballot with me, and we ran across each other multiple times on the campaign trail. He's a very decent person. He deals with the general public very well, and very genuinely. And he's been on statewide ballot, so he's got a high name recognition, unlike the other potential Democratic challengers. For me, the concern with Tony Evers is he going to be tough enough as a campaigner going against Governor Walker, who, you know, his idea of economic policy is to go to the Foxconn casino and bet all the state's money on black, but there's no disputing the fact that Governor Walker is a very good campaigner, very strong. He and his allies will have. And my only question is, Tony is going to be strong enough in counterpunching?
You think he might be strong enough in counterpunching, Kevin?
I think the real question is, will Evers survive his primary? Because, as you said, we're looking at five Democrats already, and you have another probably car full of potential candidates looking at it as well. I mean, this is a guy who's proven, unless he, you know, has, you know, kind of lackluster opponents against him, and that's what he had running for state Department of Public Instruction. He can't really win it. I mean, the only competitive primary he was in was 2001 when he first ran for DPI, and he ended up third, so he couldn't even make it to the general election. So there lies the question. I think, yeah, his name ID is going to be great, but there's more than probably enough opposition research out there to get it. I think also, you know, Ed talks about statewide ID. Spring elections have an average of about maybe 17% voter turnout versus 50% for your typical governor's race. So the idea that Tony Evers is going to be some sort of electoral juggernaut is practically laughable versus name ID. because, I mean, I'm sure if you ask poll people, could you name who's the state superintendent, what, maybe 10% off the top of their heads could probably do it, but they could name the governor. So I think the real question is, does he survive the primary first? Because you're going to have some really tough people with, you know, probably more money than Evers will have, especially if Wiehack decides not to enter that primary.
Let's talk a little bit about something Ed just brought up, Foxconn. Members of the public were able to weigh in on Tuesday in Racine County on the Foxconn incentives bill, which was in a public hearing before the Joint Finance Committee. Before we go into some of the specifics, do you think, Kevin, that this Foxconn incentives deal is a good deal and ought to pass?
Yeah, because I think it is a potential, you know, game changer for Wisconsin. I mean, we've never had a company like this come in and want to willingly, you know, become something of an internal brand for Wisconsin. I mean, they say, you know, if they get all their promises right, and that I think is obviously the big giant question mark about this entire deal. You know, you have the potentiality for three plants. According to their sources, potentially naming the new Bucks Arena after themselves, and so much more. They want, you know, and I had a conversation because I did an interview with State Secretary of Administration Steve Neitzel about this. And these guys, they want a relationship with Wisconsin. They want to be more than just an employer. They want to be, you know, something that, you know, is associated with Wisconsin. I think, you know, and then the jobs are kind of the cherry on top of the sundae.
All right. Ed, do you have any concerns about this Foxconn incentives deal?
More than you have time for, Joy. A professor of securities law, you know, I'm going to use the word potentialities. If someone was selling stock in Foxconn on these promises, unverified expectations, they would risk running afoul of the law against securities fraud to try and sell these stock based on so much fluff. But because what they're trying to sell is, you know, they want your vote, all of these promises are perfectly legal. And the question is, are we going to fall for it? This is short-termism. We saw this in the corporate world. Chief executives coming in, cutting the resupplement budget, firing all the experienced work. The bottom line looks great for a couple years. The stock price goes up. The collects their stock options, moves on to a higher-paying job. And meanwhile, corporation decays, deteriorates, and eventually collapses. This is a pattern we're seeing in politics, and Scott Walker seems to be very good at it.
Yeah, I think we're going to follow up more on Foxconn during our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. So let me get you both very quickly. Governor Walker said this week that Republicans agree in principle on a plan to end Wisconsin's budget impasse. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said, well, no deal yet. Do you know what the deal is, Kevin?
No, but I think, and this is just my opinion for it, I think the Foxconn deal has actually helped pave the way to a potential budget deal, because the I-94 corridor, which is in Speaker Voss's neck of the woods, is something he wants. So clearly that helps get that through. And the bigger question is, what is the eventual quote-unquote deal maker for transportation? Because that's always the big hang up. The talk is, you know, they may get, you know, tax relief in exchange for, you know, apparently increased fees for hybrid and electric cars, which honestly needs to happen given the fact that they do not pay the gas tax.
That's going to have to be the last word. I'm sorry, Ed. Ed Pallone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Kevin Benversi is the research director with Media Trackers. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network.